Hi, and welcome to another edition of the East Texas News Roundup. I'm Valerie Riddell. I'm the news director of Polk County Publishing Company, and I'm here with Chris Edwards.
Howdy, everybody.
Chris is the editor of the Tyler County Booster in Woodville, and Jason Klopik.
Hello.
Jason is the editor of the Groveton News and the Trinity Standard, and Megan Whitworth is with us.
Hey, you guys.
Megan is the editor of the Out West of the Houston County Courier, and Jacob McAdams, editor of the San Jacinto News-Times. What? And both Sanjac and Houston County, the Crockett area, have had a big week for crime news. And Megan's going to start us off talking about how someone escaped from the Houston County Jail.
Uh-oh. It happened Monday morning at 6:05 a.m. The guy was named Bobby Eugene Wood. He's a 55-year-old man. But it's still a questionnaire of how he did escape. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of questions around it. But he was just what our chief deputy GP Shearer said was that they were that morning at 6:05. He was a trustee for the Houston County Jail. And while he was preparing and serving meals for breakfast, he complained of being ill. So they said he could go to the bathroom. And during that time, he made the escape. And they said it was believed that he propped the kitchen receiving door open sometime during his shift in the kitchen. And that's when he made the escape. And he was seen, or they thought they spotted him, the railroad authority, at the tracks, and that he is towards the Lovelady area. But they have not captured him, and it's been 2 days.
And what was he originally in jail for?
Well, we're still getting that. They haven't released that information, but it was on November 14th, 2017, KXXV in Grosbeck, Texas. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where that is exactly.
Well, it's based out of Waco, actually. But oh, okay. Grosbeck's in the Waco, typical clean television area.
South gotcha. Of Waco, I believe.
East.
Always
east
ask Waco, the sports yeah. guys about geography. They know where everything is.
But he was a traffic stop, and there was two people got arrested for drugs, and then him and another fellow, Clifton O'Wiley Burns, made an escape and ran away again. And
oh, from the traffic stop.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's,
so he's a runner, and he was
career escapee.
I know. And it said there that he was wanted for in Leon County for burglary of a building, and in Houston County also for burglary of a building. And has an active parole violation warrant for burglary of a building at the time. I can't say that
wow.
word.
It's like he goes in cycles of wanting to be in jail and wanting to be out of jail. Because yeah. if he wanted to stay out, you would think that he would keep burglarizing.
Don't go into buildings that you don't have a key to.
Exactly.
Is a good general rule. But
pretty much.
He goes from breaking and entering to entering and breaking.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Wherever he is, that's not where he wants to be.
Right.
The grass is always greener on the other side.
Because
extreme bipolar.
Actually,
kind of,
So Megan has that going on. Mm-hmm. And did you have another crime story?
There was a fellow who got murdered.
Oh, that's always a
one.
That'll dampen a holiday.
It was like
weekend.
Early Sunday morning. Okay. And that's still a little unclear. The cops got called out to a deer lease. Mm-hmm. And there was a fellow that had shot a man in the head. And he was right there. He didn't try to run away. He told the cops what happened, and he went to jail. I just want to know why.
Is he charged with murder?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe
okay.
he was upset about the amount of points on the deer that the murderer got compared to the amount
know.
Of points on the buck that
frequently,
he got.
Frequently in this part of the world, and maybe in Central Texas too, but frequently people are, lots of adult beverages are consumed at deer camp, so alcohol may have been a factor.
Or it could be similar to that video game shooting in Jacksonville, Florida a couple weeks ago.
Right.
The guy lost. He was very angry, so he just took it out on 4 different people and shot him. I mean, it's just like, come
hopefully
on.
Hopefully it's not something like that.
Well, I hope not.
I would hope it's an abandoning reason and not just out-and-out jealousy in your right mind.
It's not uncommon, though, for people to lash out and stuff like that when you're not thinking clearly. So, I mean, it's sad to say that it is true.
True. Happens a lot.
And they were both from Houston, so city
people. Okay, so they brought a thing up here with
folk.
Them.
Yeah.
City and, folk just don't get it.
And I know in San Jacinto County, the sheriff's department over there rolled out at 4:30 this morning with the SWAT teams from Houston and Montgomery County to, they've been in an investigation. Have you got to a chance to get up to speed on that one yet, Jacob?
Not yet. I mean, I will say this, because that just happened now recently, but I will say this, that has been, I guess you can say, par for the course for the Sheriff's Department. They have been, to put it plainly, Safeson County has had this problem before.
Yeah.
When Greg Capers got in, which he got in to finish an expired term.
Mm-hmm. And, the prior sheriff passed away.
Yes. And that has been one of the big things he has wanted to just drop the hammer on, is mm-hmm. the attacking of drug issues in Sanderson County. Meth labs have been a big part of that.
Right.
So this is just, you know, this is definitely another takedown that they're doing with.
Right.
This campaign, I guess you could say.
All right. And as we record this, there are 4 adults in the San Jacinto County Jail. I talked to Captain Joe Schulte this afternoon about it. They, as part of a month-long investigation, they had learned that an inmate, a trustee in their jail, was, when he was out on work detail, he would pick up packages that contained drugs. And the first time that they have, they begin an investigation, so he picked up one package that contained cocaine and brought it back to the jail to share with his fellow inmates. And then a second round trip, he picked up meth when he was out on a work detail. They obviously, they're, you know, everything in the jail is recorded. All phone calls are recorded. So they identified which particular inmate was bringing it in. They haven't told us who that is yet. But he would bring it in, and they were listening to phone calls and staked out video where he was in this area where drugs were being left. And they identified a particular female suspect in that area, and they got search warrants and went out today and picked it up. But they also said when they went back to this home where she would, after she made her little route, went back to the house, this house was a horrifying condition, that it's no running water, no electricity. There were 2 kids in the house with all these weapons. They were using buckets for waste. It was because they had no running water. They had a number of roosters chained up that they were being groomed, or it seemed to be a rooster fighting operation going on. So there's several animals seized. They're all charged with 2 felonies now, but there are going to be some more misdemeanors and just keep going. The kiddos got released to family members in Houston. But it's odd that both these cases are cooking this week, because if you look back in 2010, we had a similar thing happening here in Polk County. At the Polk County Jail, they were doing some construction to double the size of the jail, as you do, and took down their exterior perimeter fence. And they were even dropping packages like in the parking area and something. So your baby mama would drive through and drop a little coke in the parking lot, and you would go out and pick it up the next day and so on. So one of the guys there, his name is Daniel Falls, that he had brought his whole family into this smuggling operation. So it kind of marries those 2 stories together. You've got a whole family that was bringing cigarettes, narcotics, phone cards, all kinds of things into the jail in 2009. Then in 2010, he's made his way up to trustee status. They had propped a exterior door open, and he sees the door open and just takes advantage and boogies right out the door, and you got to look for him for about a week.
It's interesting to me that you brought up, he's, you know, got the family all in on this, because also it's funny, ironically, because you mentioned Captain Joel Schulte, and I actually just talked to him just a moment ago, and he had mentioned that when he said in the 4 years that he's been with Simpson County, they have not had to deal with someone escaping like that, but he did mention to me that he has seen this pretty prevalent in mm-hmm. places like Harris County, for mm-hmm. instance. And he had mentioned to me that typically one of the first things they'll do is they'll go to members of their contact list, and that can include family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
It can also include former inmates.
Right.
And, you know, he says they'll get involved there. And from there, you know, it, depending on who it is, you know, it can vary. But, like, one of the things he told me is that, of course, they might think about getting out of the country. So they will go to contacts they know that might be able to hook them up with IDs or ways to change their appearance.
Yeah.
So
the question is, you know, nowadays with all the technology we have, how does this happen? How does an inmate escape? And, you know,
leaving the door open is a pretty good.
Well, yeah, leaving the door open is a pretty good way to get out. But you got to think about it. You know, if you're in for a long sentence, you know, 10, 15 years or maybe life in prison, you get that, you know, what do I have to lose mentality. and you have nothing but time to study your surroundings very intricately and figure out when a door is open or what crevice you might be able to wedge open a bit more. And there's no amount of motion sensors or cameras that can really prevent somebody who really knows it that intimately.
You
also have the people on the inside who work there who are sometimes corrupt and can smuggle in things to inmates that they build a rapport with. I mean, that's happened more than once.
Kind of reminds me of this claymation cartoon from the 80s, The Wind in the Willows. It was a movie. Mm. One of the characters, Mr. Toad, is arrested for reckless driving and stealing a motor car. Well, the daughter of the jailkeeper gives him a dress to wear, a washerwoman's dress, because she said he resembles her aunt, who is a washerwoman. So then he breaks out of the jail. They just assume he's a washerwoman. And then he ends up getting on a train and escaping back to Toad Hall. Never got arrested.
It's funny you do bring that up, though, Chris, because Joe Schulte had told me a little bit more about that. And he did say, you mentioned corruption on the inside. He said that's one way that does tend to happen, is they usually they bond with some of the guards. And as he put it, not every prison guard is going to be built with moral fortitude.
Right.
And he had told me that sometimes when they start investigating, one of the first things they do is they go to whatever guard was on duty,
right,
you know, and around those prisoners at those times.
And it kind of comes back to another issue that we're dealing with, is when you look at what reward there is for correctional officers in a county jail or even in prison. And you have to realize that the inmates are con men, not to put too fine a point on it. I mean, they have everything to gain and nothing to lose by spending every work day, several hours a day, wearing down that correctional person. And especially when you've got, I mean, they're masters at it. And they you know, the security folks are locked up in there as well. So they're hearing it day in, day out. So if we don't, as a community or society, kind of help people who voluntarily take on that role, a very important role, what's going to happen? You know, how is it going to affect our jails and other security areas? That, for that matter, if you're on a janitorial staff in a jail, they don't typically use them for that reason. But in Polk County, what this guy, escapee, learned is that they would typically open the door briefly to power wash out the kitchen. If you have catfish on Friday, well, you want to hose out all of that grease. A lot of regular restaurants in Houston do it. So they do open the door briefly, but they try to have a guard stand in there. But it's pretty easy to pull another couple of guys in and get them to distract that person. And the next thing you know, they're in the wind, so to speak.
Absolutely.
I
was just going to say that corrections have come a long way from the days of, you know, like what was depicted in Cool Hand Luke. You know, he was famous for escaping jails in that movie. But as much as our technology changes and develops toward this application of corrections, there's still going to be some hole somewhere in the security system. And your crafty, intelligent con men, not to put too fine a point of it, like Valerie said, is they're going to find those holes over time, but they will.
The technology is always going to be a double-edged sword. Whenever you increase in technology, you're going to increase ways to get around things. And I think one thing that I talked about with Captain Schulte as well is he had said that usually your contacts on the outside, the people you have for visiting hours, they're actually influencing that as well. And you can communicate through code. And the thing is, depending on how you communicate through code, you know, it's like if you've seen some movies that do integrate a lot of code, there are ways you can get around it, and there's no way you can tell if it's code or not, because it can be something only they know.
Right.
It's not like Pig Latin, where everyone knows Pig Latin. You know,
right.
But you can always establish something. Okay, this is how we're going to do it. You know, only we do it this way, because I'm not pulling it from anywhere else.
So I have a question.
Okay.
Because my guy was a trustee, and Valerie, your guy was a trustee.
Mm-hmm.
Should something be looked into?
Well, and it's kind of what I was edging up to, is they don't few county jails employ like custodians, because they get inmates to do that service. Mm-hmm. So it is, you want to reward the people that behave well when they're in this going through this punishment. So you have to have some sort of a reward system just to make that group of people manageable. We don't want them killing each other. We don't want them busting out. So there has to be some carrot offered to encourage good behavior inside the jail.
Yes.
And they use TV for that a lot. In the county jail, they're typically there for up to a year or maybe more. And, you know, we had a case here in Polk County that there was a man who was a building contractor and he built homes for a living. And he actually had a sexual assault charge. But he served pretty much all of his time here at the county jail because they would use him to make repairs on any of the public buildings, the courthouse, the city hall, anything that is not a for-profit business. And we still do that. I think all of our counties do inmate work projects where they do landscaping and things like that. So they're all things that need to be done, and they're saving the taxpayers money and actually really trying to repay society. It is, you have to be still be very wary of trustees.
I think what a lot of people have to understand too is that at the end of the day, there's no 100% foolproof method.
True.
When I remember there's someone who was telling us about one of the prison systems, I believe it's a prison in Texas. This is a while back, so I do not remember all the names, but what I do remember is that this particular prison is one of the most dangerous ones to work in. You have a lot of violent inmates there. They had the statistics basically said that they averaged a few altercations every day. But they had done a system that involved where they were basically going in and teaching the word of God, kind of preaching to them and whatnot. And they said it has severely reduced those altercations to where instead of having a few every day, now it's like maybe one every day.
Right.
So you know, obviously it's very different than a reward system, so to speak, but it's they have to do something. You can't just say, well, they're all convicts, so don't trust them, because you have different people that have different reasons for being, why they're in there and whatnot, and, you know, not everyone's gonna be the same, and you have to work with who you know is not gonna cause you problems,
right?
And you know, this is how things work. And it's not even just prisons either, it can be anywhere where you deal with groups of people,
right? And it's you do want to give someone who's been convicted of one a chance to rehabilitate. I mean, I know people are very leery of spending tax dollars on rehabilitation that may or may not be very effective, but it's kind of, what is the alternative? You know, people used to be in favor of the death penalty because they said they had a perception that it was cheaper than keeping someone in prison for 50 or 60 years. And we've now, if it ever was true, I'm looking back at some really, really old cases here in Polk County, it's not true anymore because you spend as much prosecuting a death penalty case than it takes to house an inmate in maximum security for two lifetimes. So there's just not a wash there.
Well, a lot of that too is also going to be because they do go through the appeals process.
Right, and we have to pay the attorneys on both sides, exactly. And medical evidence. And it is very expensive, but it's just, I mean, we've seen so many cases lately overturned because of DNA evidence or something that's pretty rock solid. And it's like, well, maybe we do need to avoid executing them since it's so hard to bring them back.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you look at
it's hard to get a do-over.
You look at this way, it goes back to being a double-edged sword, mm-hmm. because it's kind of how everything is. And also, for those of you who are listening here who aren't quite familiar with the concept, double-edged sword means there's a positive to it, there's a negative to it as well. So, I mean, it's just one of those things you have to, you know, look at the benefits and the costs and figure out which way works best. And it's sort of like in San Francisco County, one of the big things that happened there was you had the case with a victim who was murdered, I think, back in 2004. I could be wrong on this, but it was a while back. He was a high school custodian. Mm-hmm. Or at least he was a custodian for the school district.
Mm-hmm.
He was murdered, and it was they convicted girl named Megan Winfrey, mm-hmm. along with her father, and I think the other person was her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And the father and the brother, they actually had... They had gotten out pretty early because they overturned some of the convictions because they convicted them up into the system. So you have lineups in prison.
Was that the Scent lineup?
Yes.
It was. Okay.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know the story, basically law enforcement agencies are involved. What they did was they had gotten different scents and they put them, I think, in cans. So, you know, you have a standard lineup. The idea is for the witness to point out the suspect from other people. And here they had gotten different scents, and one of them had a scent from one of the suspects, and they had a bloodhound sniff it out, and that was their match. But the problem is, it's an animal basically giving testimony if you want to look at it that way.
Right.
So yes, that case ends up being, she was in prison for about 6 years, I think. And you know, eventually, you know, they do get her out, and then there's this big lawsuit that follows up after that because right. of that those convictions.
Yeah. While it might mean that's great to have as a tool, that the dog is going to go to somebody that matches the scent, maybe. Or maybe it's because you've got cheese in your pocket. right. Or we're driving the Domino's car. But it's...
The dog can't tell you what he's thinking.
Right.
Right. That's right. Part of the problem. That it's okay for one, you know, and it's just like people, we're seeing the CS, they're calling it the CSI effect. People want some scientific, they want DNA on everything. And you don't get DNA on everything, or the DNA you collect may have, in my house, may not have anything to do with a criminal episode that happens 2 years from now. But it is, you can use that as one piece of circumstantial evidence and then build from there. So,
and that's always a problem, too. And so, and that's what it really comes down to is, I mean, yes, we want to see these criminals punished, but you have to be careful because there's never a way to really be 100% certain.
Right.
Of how these things go down.
Right. Unless you were there yourself.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you have in jury selection for these cases, you hear attorneys talk a lot about beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, you want jurors to be as convinced as they are about choosing who you're going to marry. Absolutely. Not buying a car level of convinced.
You life know? And death situation or and then, choices.
You know, if you're just suing somebody if Chris is suing me because he doesn't like me to wear a Longhorns jersey, that can be just a preponderance of an evidence that it's 51% think that he's justified versus 49% think he's not, because that's money. And as much as we love money, it's not depriving you of your liberty.
True.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll even wrap it up with that particular point as far as, you know, making convictions like this. The film 12 Angry Men, it solidifies that point very well, because even at the end when they all answer not guilty, you never know for sure if the defendant is innocent or guilty. The film, and the thing is, the film is not supposed to address that. It's supposed to address whether or not if there's reasonable doubt.
Right.
And so at the end, he may have actually committed the murder. But
and how much doubt. Other factors that have nothing to do with what you're there to decide. I mean, I know in 12 Angry Men, there's a bunch of guys that want to get out for a ball game.
Right.
Yeah.
Or other things like that. And it's like how many other factors go into that? How many times does a jury link? Or an individual juror lean towards voting guilty because they remind you of that seventh grade science teacher that you didn't like, or, you know, just factors that, you know, hey, we're all human beings and you have things that are influencing you that you don't realize, or you have confirmation bias or a little more negative things like prejudice or jump into conclusions, all of right. those intellectual fallacies that can kind of go in there. But.
Well, that's what my government teacher told us when we were discussing appeals in high school, is that that's the sort of thing that you have appeals for, is when
right.
you have these issues where the jury may not even really give a care about.
Right.
You know, they just want to go ahead and give that conviction based on what they see at the surface instead of actually discussing it out.
So have y'all ever noticed who all shows up for jury duty when a trial's starting? I mean, I assume we all covered.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I hadn't checked my mail in 3 days and I got a jury summons the weekend. So
now that you have a district attorney in your community
who's actually going to trial and trying cases, but it's, yeah.
I've always gotten out of jury duty.
Fun.
you have that golden exemption right now, because
right.
if your child is 12 or under.
Yeah.
Of course.
I've been kicked off a lot in the last 15 years because they know that I've already done my own interrogation of the police before the jury summons came out. Right. But that'll get you off.
Oh, yeah.
The judge is like, I don't want a newspaper reporter on my jury.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though that's not one of the exemptions listed generally, you can right. get off.
Because we are
journalist.
All between the
working that day.
But between the prosecutors, the defense, and the judge, some one of those three is not going to want a reporter on that jury right. because they're afraid we're going to sway, you know, whatever we're convinced of, we're going to pull everybody across right. to our side because we're so enemies of the people, right?
But shouldn't we be like the top person that they want? Because we don't have it.
There's that fine line. Are we experienced, and do we get up every day and practice being objective? Or are we jaded because I was trying to count the other day how many murder trials or homicide trials where somebody, you know, a death is involved. How many of those have I covered? And it's somewhere like 18 or so that I actually went and sat in the courtroom. You know, am I just too jaded that someday if I retire, if my grandson takes care of me like he's promising to now, and I'm going to hold him to it, my gosh, he's two, he knows what he's saying, am I too jaded to be on a jury?
That's a really good question.
Well, I think on one hand, since you've seen so much, I mean, you'll know how to behave on a jury. And if you're jaded, that would give you, in my opinion, a little more unbiased because it's going to be like, six one way, 60.
Well, and I mean, I kind of feel like it's, I don't know. I just covered a trial where I had known the victim. I went to high school with his parents. So I knew him, you know, gave him breathing treatments as an infant. Someone shot at him and he's a police officer and they missed. Thank goodness. So happy that happened, but came down that way. But it is, okay, it was just a constant check. Am I being objective every minute? Because, you know, number one, it's like he contested charges that involved other people that were at that house at the time. But the officer's wearing a body camera. It's on video. There wasn't much doubt at all that he did take a firearm and shoot it because we all saw the movie. And as far as who was he trying to kill that was there? Was he going after the police officer? Why, if he wanted to kill, you know, a particular person there, didn't he just circle around and come back later after the deputy was gone? So there's all kinds of things that you wonder. And I guess one time where I saw the number of cases that I've seen is you had one charge against the police officer, and the way we decide in Texas whether you can stack a charge or you're serving all the sentences on a multiple charge indictment at one time, if it's all part of one episode, like he drove into the subdivision, shot at the house, ran away, circled back around, shot at the house again, and then when he was fleeing, may have shot at a neighbor. So is that one? But he was charged with 7 felonies out of that. So is that one episode? Or whereas if he had shot it, done the first shooting one day, gone home, come back another day, those could have been stacked. But since he kind of did it in one, as my grandmother would say, one fell swoop, he's going to serve out all of the sentences together. So when you consider one of them as an aggravated charge against a police officer, he's going to face 99 to life for that. So it almost didn't matter, as coarse as that sounds, what other charges he was found guilty of, because none of those other things would make him serve another day in jail.
I'll say this too, as far as us being on juries and whatnot, you think about it this way too. I mean, I don't know what all the restrictions are for who can be put on jury, but hypothetically speaking, look at it this way. Would you want a cop on the jury? And the reason why I say that is because there are going to be people who are local. You know, so local law enforcement is going to be they're going to be well aware of that crime. Even if they're not working that case, they're going to know some of the details. But you want someone that can influence the opinion.
And I would say, by and large, cops and their families are generally don't get picked on the jury. And they, you know, some retired cops, but I mean, on this particular trial, the former bailiff for the 411th was called and they didn't even have him hang around because it's like, it was in your court. Right. And, you know, you'd held this job for every year this court existed until about 3 years ago. So they sent him home. And there was another retired Polk County deputy that he did have to hang around for all the questioning, but then they blew.
Yeah, and there's so many different questions that they ask. I mean, in terms of given the nature of the crime that's being tried. Case in point, I was on a call for jury duty in Nacogdoches several years ago, and it was a theft, a bank robbery case. And you know, one of the questions was, have you ever been around someone or, I guess, been victimized by somebody who stole from you or who was under the influence of drugs and stole from you? And I had, actually. And so that got me sent home. And there's so many different things they look at to make sure that you're not compromised in any way.
And they ask a lot of questions about, did you know the defendant? Did you, you know,
absolutely.
Did you know all those people? And in a small town, it's kind of like, that's the police chief. He's been there for 30 years. Yeah, we know him. But it's kind of like, do you know him so well you can't be objective? And where that kind of comes back around is where, when I was asking originally about who do you see showing up for jury duty? The juries in East Texas tend to be very vanilla.
Yes.
And if you do have a black defendant, for example, and the people from the, you know, the black people who should respond to the jury summons, they are frequently excused because there's a perception that they knew the defendant or his or her parents or something like that, that makes them, it's harder for them to be impartial. So where do we find a balance for that? Because we don't make that perception for other groups. If you have a Latino defendant, do you throw off everybody who speaks Spanish on the jury? You know, it's supposed to be a jury of your peers. I don't see them if you have a guy who's been in prison a couple of times. He's a member of the Aryan Brotherhood. You don't have them ask him, okay, who all is racist? Can you, if you identify with that bad perception, are you going to get off? Because we're blanketly whitening up our juries.
God, that would be one for the ages, somebody admitting to being a racist just to get out of jury duty.
Well, the excuses get very creative, I will say that. And the other part is the defendants in cases are, by and large, economically distressed, I guess, to put a positive thing on it. So it's hard to get people who really walk in their shoes on the jury, because if you're going to be on jury duty for $20 a day, can you afford to miss that your whole shift at Walmart that day for $20?
Well, speaking of juries, last month I had a murder trial. The guy was found guilty, and then the next day during the sentencing phase, it was revealed that the spouse of one of the jurors had flowers delivered to the widow of the deceased. So then they had a mistrial, and now they got to do the whole enchilada all over again.
Right. That's going to be a expense to go back and try again, because they're going to have to send out 500 jury summons anyway. But yeah, that is, I don't understand how that even got close to happening, but there may have even been, I've heard a little rumors that there may have been even more involved, that some people who had strong feelings of sympathy, and empathy is a great thing. You know, nobody wants to think of a mom raising their kids alone or something like that. But you've got to also imagine that could be your nephew.
Oh, absolutely.
That the jury's deciding about the next time.
I think that's why it's so important to take that duty seriously. If you are picked for, you know, to serve on a jury, and to not rush through things and to not, you know, to get all of those prejudices out of your mind, because think about it like that. That could be your nephew or your sister or whomever who's the defendant that you're trying to determine their fate. And sometimes you might be put in a situation where you literally are deciding a life or death sentence for them.
Well, and a lot of times there's kids involved, that the defendant has children. So even if they have been supporting that kid through illegal activities, that person's gone now. So right. Good or bad, that influence is out of the picture for a long time.
Uh-oh. And the question came up a little bit ago in this discussion about, is it hard to be objective? I think, if I'm correct, when you're covering a trial, or serving as a juror, or was it kind of a conflation going on there when the discussion opened up?
I was talking about covering, because we were in our case, our communities are small enough that sometimes you're covering people you know well.
Right. And my response to that, I was thinking about that, and I know we've got a couple of things that are going to be coming up for trial here in the next couple of months that are pretty brutal situations in Tyler County, and that been kind of festering for quite a long time. And they're situations that, you know, most of us feel pretty strongly about. And I think that, you know, in my scenario, in covering something, in covering a trial, if it's something that I just can't be objective about, if it's something I felt so strongly about, like if it was a trial where there's a defendant accused of horribly mistreating a group of animals or something, that's something that I would have to excuse myself from and assign to somebody else.
I've got your back for cat abuse cases. I won't make you do that.
Thank you. It means a lot to me.
But I guess you too, Megan. Yeah. I'll cover all your trials involving cats so that you don't want to escalate that jadedness too quickly.
So I might go key someone's car.
But yeah, I think my rule of thumb, and I think this is probably a good word for, you know, anybody who's in our line of work, that in the case of a trial or anything, really, I mean, if it's something that might potentially hinder your objectivity, ask somebody else to do it. Assign it elsewhere. We had that here when I was here at the Enterprise earlier in the year. It was actually a day that I was out covering something else, but a call came in about these horses that were horribly malnourished. And luckily, Brian Besh, our sports editor at the Enterprise, he was here and he fielded the call and took the story. And I just said, after I'd heard him, I'm glad that I wasn't here because I might have wanted to go out there and get violent with somebody for doing right. abusing animals in that way. So, yeah.
I'm pretty much the same way about people who abuse children.
Yes.
I mean, I just want to, like, hold them over the coals and burn them.
Right. And it is horrifying to see what the situation some of our kids go through here at East Texas. And it's temper or lack of funding or things like that can all kind of contribute to, because unlike animal abuse, people do find themselves as parents who didn't intend to be. True. So they're making the best of it. I've never been pushed into cat parenting or I've never had a pet. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I mean, I think that those are gateways one to the right. other, but I've never had an unplanned arrival of a dog.
Well, also kind of dovetailing off of what, you know, something Jacob brought earlier or brought up a little earlier about, it's not just in San Jacinto County. In all the counties we cover, we all have a pretty significant drug problem with methamphetamine.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Jason in Trinity County, I've covered things in Trinity County for years. I know that Sheriff Woody Wallace has done a lot to clean up a lot of that, but it's still a very present problem. And I think that a lot of the cases I hear about in Tyler County, where there's this horrible child abuse or whatever going on, neglect as well, that's usually 9 out of 10 times prefaced by an unstable environment, made unstable because of that very thing.
Right. Alcohol and drugs.
Alcohol and drug abuse. And it's extremely sad, but it's, I guess the conditions in our area are ideal for that because we have, you know, heavily forested region, rural areas where people can kind of fall off the grid and who are addicted or who are cooking this stuff. And it's a big task for our law enforcement officers to take on. And
well, that kind of
making some headway, but it continues though.
That kind of calls back to with, you know, we live in a rural area. You can do a lot of things that nobody will see you do.
Right.
But just how hard is it to remain off the grid? I mean, the inmate who escaped from the Polk County Jail, he was out for 2 weeks and then somebody found him. So you can't go to Brookshire Brothers with or Walmart without right. being on video. And actually, I've seen a lot of Walmart security video used in cases that had nothing to do with Walmart.
Sure.
So everything you do in Walmart is, they're going to give it up for, you know, when they get that subpoena. So it is going to be more and more difficult now that we've got things like traffic cameras. I mean, here in Livingston, we don't have red light cameras, but there are traffic cameras. So theoretically, they could see if you rob a house and escape, they could get your direction of travel and stuff.
I've seen red light cameras in San Jose County with all of two lights. two lights.
The only two lights in San Jose County.
I'm saying that half jokingly because I don't know how many lights are in the Evergreen and Point right. blank areas, but in Shepherd and Cold Spring, they're really together. They have two traffic
lights. Oh, yeah, that's right. There are a couple in
So are
Cold
there red
Spring,
light cameras
sure.
on this?
I have no idea.
We know kind of.
I don't want to find out either.
Right.
Well, we could probably just ask. You don't have to actually run the red light to find out.
Kind of working off what you were just saying, Valerie, and kind of tying back to earlier when we were talking about technology and how one evades capture, you know, in spite of all the technology we have, sometimes it just boils down to good old-fashioned police work and the cooperation of the community. Because in Tyler County recently, we had an episode where a guy wasn't incarcerated, but he was on house arrest. He had an ankle monitor and he'd been indicted, and that was the conditions of his bond, was to wear the ankle monitor. So he cut it and tried to skip town. Well, we put out the bulletin from the sheriff's office to our Facebook page. And then within 3 days, he was captured because of just someone calling in a tip to the sheriff's office. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a matter of trying to track his cell phone or any camera footage of him or anything. It was just somebody who happened to see the picture and the description and called in mm-hmm. the sheriff's office.
But I mean, have any of y'all ever tried to just live by cash and not be on the grid at all?
Hell, I do that today. I mean, well, I'm a cash and carry guy.
In the music business, I've seen a few that do that with not necessarily that they're trying to evade something, but they can go without going to the bank or stuff like that. But it's getting increasingly difficult to just be right. that.
Yeah, my whole world is online.
Yes.
I don't carry cash at all.
I have so many bills that there's no point in me trying to live up the
Yeah.
See, I do the bill pay. I go up to the customer service booth at Walmart or actually put the stamp on the envelope and send it off. I don't do it on the phone or by credit card or internet. I'm old school. Yeah, so,
I'm gadget grandma. I text, you know. Somebody borrows $20 from me. I want them to text me a payment.
I guess you can do that now.
It's way cleaner. What else is happening in Groveton this week, Jason?
Well, big county football matchup, Trinity and Groveton over in Tiger Stadium in Trinity.
Yeah. So we're trying to encourage people to call that the Battle of
White Rock Creek.
Yeah.
I tried to get a trophy involved in the matchup. I even brought it up to Commissioner's Court, but.
Nah, they don't. I think trophies have lost their place because of the entitlement. Everybody feels like, oh, you're going to get a trophy. But it would be cool. I mean, we could give them bragging rights.
Exactly.
Right.
Also call it the Battle of White Rock Creek.
Call it the Battle of White Rock Creek. We'll probably come out to the game and we'll catch you on video.
Who is predicted to win?
That is a very good question because both teams lost last week. Mind you, Groveton did not do very well against Lovely. He lost 46.
Like 6 points, I think they notched.
And then Trinity barely lost to Corrigan, like 22-19.
Corrigan's generally pretty tough.
Really tough. Well, so is Lovelady, but I didn't think Lovelady would be 42 points better than Groveton.
Groveton's been a powerhouse the last couple, in the regular season the last couple of years.
Well, I go back to the back-to-back state championship years in Groveton, so they definitely have a very winning tradition, so I wouldn't count them out. Because last week was not a district game.
Right. No, it was first game of the season.
Right, so they're going to probably get looks at folks that...
Oh, yeah.
May not be indicative of how they're good the rest of the season's going to go.
And it was Coach Stubing's first game as head coach, where the Lovelady head coach has been head coach for 3 years, so...
Right.
Well, yeah. And Lovelady's supposed to be, I think, state-ranked in 2A Division 2.
And then Jacob's Pirates clobbered my Lions.
Yes, they beat the Lions 68-7, I believe is the final score.
But we just did awesome in getting that 7.
I'll let you have that one.
Okay. I'm gonna
you get a trophy for getting 7.
Okay. I'm gonna try to get one of our winningest quarterbacks to come in on the podcast. Okay. I just recently got reacquainted with him, but anyway, we'll see if we can.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Pirates, we actually do have the Battle of San Jacinto coming up this Friday.
Okay.
So two big county battles.
Yeah. So yes, they'll be the Shepherd Pirates and the Cold Spring Oakhurst Trojans.
Okay.
And that's always a big thing for both those school districts. And as far as predictions are concerned, I can't tell you what anyone else is thinking, but from what I'm seeing, I do believe the Pirates are going to have this one this year. Mm-hmm. They had it the last 2 years, and I mean, I'll be fair, the years before that, for basically about a decade, the Trojans have had it. Mm-hmm. But the Trojans have gone through a lot of shifts, and they're now having a new athletic director. So far, last week they had played against the Hardin Jefferson Hawks, and it did not go too well for them. They lost 32-0. But we'll see how that goes. I mean, every team is very different now. They operate against other teams. But I do believe from what I'm seeing so far, I think the Pirates have got it.
How are the Eagles looking?
The Eagles are looking really good this season. Actually, they're predicted to finish first in district. And last week, they called the game right before the fourth quarter began because there was a player who was injured, knocked unconscious. And they still won 40-8, I believe, over Little Cypress Mauriceville. And
how is he?
He's good. He came to and he was released later that night, early in the morning, actually around 3 o'clock. So Tyler Greer, you know, he had a lot of prayers and a lot of good thoughts going his way that night. So, yes.
So that kind of begs my perpetual football question. If you had a son in eighth grade now, would you want him to play football?
If he wanted to, I'd be all for it.
Same here.
Because
I mean, I wouldn't push a kid to do anything, but I mean, if they were all about it, if they wanted to try it, I would support them 110%.
Now my son is left-handed, so I hope he'll at least consider pitching.
Oh, yeah. We'll make sure he can hit both ways.
Yes,
that's as a lefty.
I will say, I mean, as far as that's concerned, I would leave it up to my kids what they wanted to do, you know, and tell them that's your choice, and you know, if there are consequences that can potentially happen. And part of the reason why I said it too is because, fun fact, Shepherd, a couple years ago, their middle school team actually had girls playing. Mm-hmm. And there were some people that looked at that very oddly because, you know, you don't see a lot of girls playing football.
Right.
So they had three of them playing mm-hmm. football. And I say that because obviously those girls, they were probably going to face a lot of criticism for it, you know. So, I mean, and that's partially what I mean by consequences in one way. So, mm-hmm. but my point is, you know, whatever you want to do, you know, as far as sports is concerned, as far as extracurricular activities, you know, you do what you want to do. I'm not going to stop you, but, you know, I will tell you if there are consequences, you have to, right. to deal with them.
Absolutely. And well, I think
Elgin had 2 years ago, they had, and she may have returned. I guess she graduated. They had a girl place kicker, and that went really well. But the coach was just awesome at protecting her privacy at those moments that needed to be private. And she didn't, you know, the boys didn't, they were considerate and didn't automatically undress in front of her like my nephew's high school and college teams used to do. That oh, if yeah. I was in or anywhere near the locker room, I saw way more of those boys than I wanted to. But
I don't want my children to play football.
Okay.
They can do whatever they want, but I want to encourage more like music, like yeah. instruments. I want even them to go into like tap dancing and things that
well aren't and there normal, but, like, and there ordinary. Is a social consequence to growing up in Texas mm-hmm. as a boy and not playing football. But I have to say, for my two grandsons, they homeschool, so it's highly unlikely
right.
it's mm-hmm. going to come up. But you know, I have classmates who, one of them, Ricky Calvert, was a great football player in his high school days. And his son came up and he said he did advocate his son at, between his junior and senior year, just opting out of the sports. And at some point he had to decide between sports and band. And he said, you know, let him do whatever he wants to do. He says, but I have to admit, I never have 23 friends over to play football. And I'm banged up enough that it's hard to play the radio. So mm-hmm. it was a thing that do you... Now that we know, hey, your kid's going to live to be 80 or 90, and what kind of cognitive problems is he going to have?
Well, I think that those are all factors to consider. And I think, you know, the first point you made about this social stigma of not playing as well, that on the other hand, you have, well, I mean, going hand in hand with that, you know, there are a lot of kids who are more or less forced into these things. And mm-hmm. I think that's extremely toxic as well. The kids I've found who are pretty much forced into doing something they don't want to do, they don't do quite as well. I mean, mm-hmm. if I had a kid, I really like football and I really like music and I really like mm-hmm. writing and literature and things like that. But if I had a kid, I would not have those things around he or she, but I mm-hmm. would not push that upon them. I mean, when I was young, I was raised mostly by my grandparents, and my granddad was a really excellent musician, and he, you know, he always said it'd be nice for me to learn an instrument, but he never, like, forced that upon mm-hmm. me, though, and, mm-hmm. and you know, the other things, too. So I don't think you shouldn't force a kid to do anything.
No.
Well, and I've just been
backfires.
A little bit shocked. I mean, some of y'all know my family, or listeners, you know my family. It's where I have 4 sisters and 2 brothers, and I have 2 daughters. And my daughters had 7 grandkids before we got the first boy in the family. I have 1 nephew, and he's the 6'10" monster that played for Livingston and SFA. Fella. Yeah, poor delicate little Corey. But anyway... It's been, I mean, Corey was surrounded by girls and he would stomp on Barbie and things like that. But it with the next generation, it's been really shocking seeing how much my older grandson, Max, just as soon as he could walk, he wanted to drive everything. And you think some people talk about a gender type pushing kids into gender appropriate play. With him, there was no question. He was not going to cooperate with his sisters and doing what they wanted to do. He was going to do boy things, and that's kind of another deal about it. It's really hard to...
Right.
Yeah, my 4-year-old's already distinguishing what's for boys and what's for girls.
So what do you think? I mean, do you think he came pre-wired that way, or what do you think is making him make that choice?
Well,
is anything social? Because with Max, mm-hmm. I don't think it's anything social. I just think he has a really strong preference. But I also see other kids that are ambivalent. But
I think it's a combination of what Max has and also a combination of the fact that he has 2 older half-brothers.
Yeah, that he has a lot of boy-centric things going on around the house.
Yeah, he would dress up as Spider-Man every day if he could.
But never Minnie Mouse?
No.
I had a nephew when he was like 4 or 5 that would play with Bratz dolls.
Bratz dolls.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing those in the store, yeah. And they were always very scary to me.
Those are more gender neutral, though.
Yeah, and you wouldn't be caught dead with Barbie, but he will be the dinosaur all day long. So those are...
When he was a kid, my brother was caught dead with Barbie.
He was,
we actually got my mother to buy him one. Like, the way that my mother tells the story is that she tried to buy one that was like in a tracksuit or something, something mm-hmm. that wasn't quite as feminine, but he wanted the one that was like in the frilly skirt and everything. So,
well, who doesn't want a pretty girl around?
There you go.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it just is what it is. But she, her mindset was that the kids were going to probably tear them apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the funny story there. But I'll say this too, because, I mean, we're bringing up, you know, stuff that's, you know, what's for boys and what's for girls. But I mean, that's kind of like right now, there's the whole cultural thing. I hate bringing it up in the podcast, but there's a fan base of adult men that love My Little Pony for some reason. And I don't understand it, but they're there.
Bronies?
Yes, the bronies.
I had a friend that was a hardcore brony. And it was amazing for his birthday. It was only like about 5 years ago. We are not upper 20s. And he wanted for his birthday, little ponies.
That was a birthday party. I would feel so awkward at that. And I would just try and not say anything.
I mean, I assume.
That conversation.
I assume he really got harassed by the other guys in your crowd.
No, he was so cool that he pulled it off.
Okay.
Give me G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe.
I know. What's the difference between Barbie and G.I. Joe?
Hmm?
What's the difference between a Barbie and a G.I.
Joe?
Well,
see, the G.I. Joe figure
G.I. Joe is fully armed.
Articulation, too.
I mean, seen a fully armed Barbie yet.
They have more points of articulation. I mean, you can bend the knees and everything.
You're not sure what's in Barbie's purse.
The G.I. Exactly. Joes are also very distinct because each one of them specializes in something and has characteristics.
Absolutely. Like, okay, you had the diver, and you had, you know, all the different infantry.
Yeah, the sailor with the, shipwreck, the sailor with the parrot.
No, Snake Eyes. I was saying Snake Eyes.
Yeah, Snake Eyes, too.
Snake Eyes is the best.
And he didn't talk.
This is definitely the podcast we should have videoed, because all you guys have just come to life talking about G.I. Joe. It's amazing. You're excited, animated, all the body language. Y'all are leaning in. This is the most exciting. Y'all are way more excited about G.I. Joe than escaping from jail.
Well, to be right, I'll say this. Chris actually bought the best one, which was Transformers. So, I mean,
Transformers.
Robots in disguise.
That's the best-selling thing. You got a robot and you got a car all in one.
Oh, yeah.
Mask was like that, too.
Yeah, somewhere. Mask was kind of a cheaper version of Transformers.
It was a poor man's Transformers.
Voltron and all that. GoBots. Oh, man.
Now, Power Rangers completely copied Voltron.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Voltron was Power Rangers and Voltron. That's the pairing there. But now, GoBots, I actually had the GoBots lunchbox when I was a kid.
You know, I thought Voltron was the guy that you put a quarter in and he would, that was like in big. And he would tell your fortune thing.
Voltar.
Voltar. Yeah.
I saw him at the Big Texan.
They have Voltar in Elgin at that downtown cafe. But anyway.
I had over 100 Barbies when I was little. Wow. I was obsessed.
Do you have them
I actually
anymore?
Played till I was 14.
Do you have them anymore?
They are at my parents'.
I still have some of my G.I. Joes.
Huh?
I still have some of my G.I. Joes at my parents' house.
I still have a lot of my Star Wars stuff.
I have a lot of Star Wars stuff, too, and some old, a few random Masters of the Universe figures.
I have the power.
I will say
the
this.
Power of Grayskull.
I will say this, though. The toy line that, like, really was, like, a big part of my childhood was, because this is back when I was, like, not, like, 5 and everything, and whatnot, but my brother and I, best Christmas ever, we got tons of Jurassic Park toys. We had, like, so many different things.
I totally remember those, but, you know, because I remember the movie, too, and being crazy about the movie when it was out, but the action figures looked nothing like the characters in the movie.
Yeah, not at all.
You know, the Sam Neill paleontologist character looked like, you know, the action figure counterpart was, he was on steroids or something. And then you had
So they don't have a nerd mold at that toy store?
They didn't have the nerd mold. Yeah. I can't remember what company did those. But Jeff Goldblum also, like, he looked vastly different from the movie.
Kenner did the original Jurassic Park toys. And I do remember one of the most awesome things was the T-Rex, because you could stomp it.
Oh, yeah.
If you stomp the feet on the ground, it would have like a voice or a, you know, sound box that would let up the you know, thundering steps, because that was so one of the like most distinctive things about it in the film. And then you squeeze the neck and it would roar. It was just the coolest toy ever.
Yeah, and
squeeze my neck all over.
Newman from Seinfeld was a character in Jurassic Park. He was the guy who died on the toilet, actually, got eaten on the toilet. And I remember the action figure.
I did not remember that.
The action figure,
thanks.
He looked nothing like he did.
Newman.
I mean, it was like the most vast difference in that toy line. I do remember that.
I'll say two
great film though.
I'll say two things on that. The character is Gennaro, the one that gets eaten off the toilet by the T-Rex.
Okay.
Gennaro in the book is actually very different. He's actually a very helpful person. He even actually tries to help Mulvaney go trank the T-Rex. And
I thought his name was Dennis Nedry.
No, that's the one that betrayed everyone and then got eaten.
That's, okay, so that's, yeah, you're right. Those are different characters, yeah.
The other thing I will say is there's the YouTube channel College Humor. They actually did get that actor to play Gennaro, and they did their own, basically it's a whole, like, humorous take on why Gennaro has to die, which is because he's not useful to the rest of the plot.
Exactly.
That'll always get killed off in a story. So yeah. Why was he ever in there then?
To die.
Okay.
Somebody get eaten by the dinosaurs.
The whole point of the character is essentially that he's there to show just how terrible this scene can be when it breaks out. But you look
if he was in Star Trek, he would have been a red shirt.
To an extent, but more significant because, you know, you still see that he does represent a lot of the dark aspects of the company engine and whatnot. But, yeah, but they establish everything like, you know, Grant's the paleontologist, you know, you obviously get him, and Ellie's also a dinosaur expert. You know, you got the two kids aren't going to die, but then you have the kid, the girl is a computer genius, and then you had, like, Malcolm's established reason.
Jeff Goldblum,
Basically, the guy that's playing him says, yeah, well, I'm the one who told everyone this is a bad idea, so I'm going to stick around and make sure that I rub it in everyone's face. So, basically, everyone had a reason to stick around except for Gennaro.
Speaking of Malcolm, Jeff Goldblum, there was a thrift store I read about. I think it was this thrift store in Lubbock where all of the picture frames, they took pictures of Jeff Goldblum and put them in the picture frames. I thought that was the coolest thing I'd seen in a while. I totally want to go and buy one just to have on my mantle, you know. Jeff Goldblum looking down at everybody.
Very nice.
Well, it fits Malcolm very well, all things considered.
He and his energy-efficient black clothing, all black wardrobe. And
yeah. That is actually one of the things the book gets right. The movie, where he is like that in the book. He wears all black.
Yeah.
It is talked about, like, why would anyone dress like that? But it's like how he is.
Just think of the time that saves.
Yeah, but you're in a humid jungle where you have clothing that basically absorbs all the heat.
Mm-hmm. Khaki is jungle attire. Okay, well, thanks for joining us today. I guess this has devolved about as far as it can.
But it was fun, wasn't it?
Scatological humor. So thanks for joining us. Be safe out there.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
And it's always more than meets the eye.
Yes.
I've lost it. I've lost control.
I'm done. Hi, Don. Nice to meet you.
We'll see y'all next week. Stay tuned. We'll be having this other episodes of the East Texas Roundup featuring all six editors for the Polk County Publishing Company. And we're going to be starting soon with Crime Behind the Pine Curtain, talking about true crime stories in our region. And Megan, tell us what you're working on.
Pinewood Profile,
telling the story of special people here in the forest. Thanks. Bye-bye.